Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Welcome, everyone, to this March 18th, 2018 show of episode of An Emerging Forest. On this wonderful Sunday night, midway through March, and I had asked Dave Miller to be on in an earlier show, and I wanted him to talk about some facets of himself, and that show actually turned into the show that was Touch Mother Earth related, or wholly focused on Touch Mother Earth, because that was more topical and that was more urgent to get that show out. And tonight, David and I had been talking back and forth about what he wanted to talk about, and he came up with a really good topic for tonight's show. So welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you very much, Alan.
And so we were talking back and forth about, how do you move on with your life? How do you shed the old person? How do you examine yourself? What are things that are, not being dealt with now that you sort of, hey, I want to develop these pieces of myself? And we went back and forth several times. And then earlier this week, you said, hey, what if I talk about the changes that I've seen in myself over my life as far as how I associate my life with spirituality? And I said, okay, that's perfect, because it's just in this, in the motivation, it's just in the working of, the topic that, quote unquote, the real topic actually comes up. And that's such a great topic. So why don't you lead us out and start talking about your perspectives from an early age or wherever you want to start.
Well, good. And again, I appreciate it, Alan. I think in doing this topic, I'm actually researching myself and going through reflection of how I was as a child versus how I am now. And some of the things I absolutely adored when I was a child, if I look back now, were rituals. And they weren't rituals the way you might think of, but because we had a really good family structure, the rituals were all the positive ones, like you got together Monday through Friday guaranteed for dinner. By having dinner was not just about the food itself or the meal, that you're being fed, but it was about the topics that were discussed. And I remember as a young child, you know, we talked about homework, family vacations. We talked about what was going on. It was the hub. It was the central of how I believed life existed. And my fun thing is I remember back when candy bars were a nickel and my allowance was 25 cents, I could get 5 candy bars for a quarter. And one day I went to the store and candy bars were now 6 cents. And I could only buy 4. And I went home and I said, Mom, and she said, we'll talk about it at dinner. And it was as simple as that. We'll talk about it at dinner. And at dinner, I brought it up because I was allowed to speak. And I said, well, I think I need a raise in my allowance. And Dad was like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I can only buy 4 candy bars instead of 5. They cost 6 cents, and that'll be 30 cents. And based upon my presentation, I got a raise of 5 cents in my allowance. That was dinner. It was fun, but we actually got things done. And things changed because at one point, my dad fell ill, and he ended up having cancer and going in and out of a hospital. And when I was 16, he passed. Now, all the rituals that were associated with that family dinner disappeared. I was making casseroles with my sister for my younger brother and sister. And Mom would make sure we had prepared it for us while she would go to visit Dad in the hospital. And so rituals changed. And I've now been recapturing rituals, whatever their fashion is. The other aspect of what we might call spirituality is that spirituality is not, but could be, synonymous with religion. So while we might see ourselves in a religious context and having rituals and things, those rituals may come from deeper values. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does.
So if we go back to when I was really young, before I could tie my shoes kind of thing, my parents did bring me to a church. They were trying to figure out their own religion. They came from two different Christian-based religions, trying to find their own. They didn't really like either of their own. And they found the new church. And then, you know, I'm young. I'm being brought. And my earliest memory of a church was where they would ask me to go down to the, I guess it was the nursery school or the Sunday school service for kids. And I remember having to draw a picture of Jesus on a horse, and I'm thinking, no, I want to be upstairs because I'm hearing them singing. I wanted to be around the singing. And so at some point, that week, the next month, well, whatever, I was about 5, my best guess, I got to go up and sing. Did I understand religion? No. But I liked being part of the harmonics that I was feeling in my body by sharing my voice. So that, from a church point of view, is ritual. Singing is ritual. Whether it be the hymns or whatever they do, they have a connection that, you know, if it's a particular religion, their version of God, etc. Now, that church burned down. And I remember it was around the time my sister had just learned to tie her shoes. So we didn't go to church. And at some point, cut to a period forward, we didn't go to church, so we weren't agnostic necessarily. We certainly weren't atheist, but because I was so young, I didn't have a concept of God. So atheism versus agnosticism meaning doubt, none of it really applied to me. And then the next thing I remember Mom telling us was that we're humanist. And one of the reasons she told us we were humanist was because we accepted all. We accepted all humans, and there was never a talk or approach about God. It was we're humanist because we believe in mankind, that everybody should be equal. And one of the stories she told real quick was how my younger sister, one of two sisters, came home from nursery school, and we lived in a section where there was a black population that were lower income. There were white people there too, but they came to our nursery school, and she came home and said, "Mom, why do black people smell?" And my mom said, "Black people don't smell." Are you asking what that particular person might have? And she challenged my sister. My sister's like 4 years old, and I'm 5 and a half. She said, "People might not shower as often as other people." So she took the explanation away what could have turned into a prejudice. And she said, "You have to believe in people for where they are at their level." That was the beginning of a whole nother level of training towards spirituality. Because if you're not prejudiced, you've already taken the next step that everybody has their own needs, perceptions, differences, and where it's going to go. And I do want to bless my parents, because in my early high school and on, if I think about the ability to date anybody I wanted to date, one of my earliest girlfriends was Korean. I had someone else was Cherokee, another who was American, African-American. I dated somebody Filipino, and I married somebody Mexican, and I dated somebody who was full-time, you know. I just never was told that you can't do these things. Whereas I do find that religions can be a little restrictive. I'm not going to blame a religion. And I also want to say that sometimes religion and culture are the same. The people I've known and dated that were Jewish, where the culture was integrated in the lifestyle. And I got to do a Seder my first time early on with a girlfriend. I got to see what the skulls were. In fact, when I was kind of afraid to even go to a church, I went to a bar mitzvah. And I went to a synagogue. I'd never been in a synagogue, and it was a whole different energy. There was different ways of looking at the building. And so my spiritual path sort of started early by not being restricted to a particular religion. Wow.
Yeah, so by having your mom basically say, by having your mom instill in you more of a less restrictive openness.
Sure. And then if you go back to look at what were rituals, since we didn't subscribe to a particular church, what would I consider our church? And I go back and I think about when we went camping. My mom at that time was teaching guitar. She also played some banjo. My dad was a little bit of a singer, but not, you know, he just enjoyed hearing my mom play. And we'd go camping, and we'd be around the campfire, and we were friends and love. We actually met Pete Seeger, came to our events, but we went camping, and we'd sing around the campfire. So it was my sister, me, and Chris, and part of that was my younger sisters, Emily and Paul, were still children, you know, very young or weren't born yet. And so camping for me, going back from when I was like 9 years old, was spiritually singing around the fire. Again, it was kind of like going to a church around the fire. I'd hear my mom play, my dad would try to join in, and I would fit in whatever came. And from that came my love for music. I was absolutely hooked. My dad was into the jazz 10-inch records. Mom was into classical music, but together they came listening to folk music. And I remember very young going to the Newport Festival. And I know it wasn't the year Bob Dylan came out live, but it was like the next year or so, because Peter, Paul, and Mary were there, and very early folk. And then my mom started making patchwork. And patchwork was going to the farms and getting the cloth, and then going out and buying fabric from there and making, starting with quilts and going on to making things like ties, bibs, etc. And she started wanting to vend, and we'd go to bluegrass festivals. And all of a sudden, I'm listening to bluegrass, and she actually gave a tie that she made to Bill Monroe, and we got to see the Gatlin brothers. And I was a kid. By the time I was 12, I'd gone to Colorado and to Four Corners, learned about a Native American, saw them making beads. I went home and wanted to make these beads for these little rings that I would sell at the festivals that my mom and dad were at. Dad would tie it in with my mom because we were a hands-on family. My sister, Chris, roller skated and then raced. We would find a craft show while there was a race and do two together. My dad would support my sister in her athletics. And this family structure evolved. I mean, it was camping sometimes. Maybe it was a road trip, and then, you know, come back that day. But the family was integrated and involved. And if you don't have a family structure, which so many of us have lost today, we have to either find ritual or some other connection. And those connections can definitely come from within, or they can be taught, that you don't even know you were taught. So here's the example for that. When I was about 12, we had one of those little plastic swimming pools. It didn't last the winter, and the spring said, Dad said, it's got to go. It's, you know, it leaks. He pulled it away, and here was the circle of sand. And he's talking to my mom, and he said, we can't plant grass seed because it's just going to be this big circle. And somehow out of the idea was born, let's plant cucumbers. So I was about 11 or 12, and we planted cucumbers. Cucumbers love sand mixed in with the soil and the earthworms. And we had a bumper crop that went way beyond, and Dad was the kind of guy who would mow around it. He wasn't going to hurt the garden. And that year I sold cucumbers to the neighbors, 10 cents each, 3 for a quarter, with a little wagon. I was then connected to gardening. That summer made a major change. If you flash forward a couple of years, I actually built a greenhouse out of panes of glass that were thrown away from the old 1900s buildings that had the hanging glass you would hitch on outside the window. And a couple 2x4s, I built it. I was 13. I had a greenhouse. And had the roof could lift, and the door was, you know, just a broken door of some glass that I put hinges on. And that became my spirituality. Being able to hang out in that building, that little tiny thing, was, you know, just enough to get an aisle for myself to walk. But I got to plant, and I got to talk to nature, and I connected. And that became my church, if you want to call it a church. It became my way of recognizing. I would go out every day and inspect how much bigger something was, what needed water. If it was too hot, I had to lift the window. I was in school. I was a kid in school. And I could tell if something wasn't doing well. I had to learn to sacrifice. You know, you got too many seeds, you got to pluck them. Something's wrong with the soil. I learned about nutrients. Came a focus for me that to this day is well within me. And my connection with the earth is my spirituality in a nutshell, with all many other aspects. But that defines how I connect with what some might call their God or creator or path.
Yeah, it's an interesting connection, because I had a similar deep gardening path with a garden that was in a house that my family moved into when I was, I think, 7 years old, and that house passed out of our hands in 2010. And there was an area in that yard that started as raspberries, but we moved the raspberries out. And then the spring ritual was always the same. We had two very large compost heaps, and I would always take the top, the unrotted material off, and condense that into the new compost heaps, and then take the rotted material out and dig it into the...
You flipped
it into
it.
The garden.
Yes,
and,
you flipped it.
And it was just so interesting that when you're sort of leaving a space, you say, well, I wonder how much different the soil in the garden is than the soil right next to it. And you take a sample, and the soil in the garden was this deep black humus. Fertile, and then right next to it where the lawn was that had never received any of the compost was just so uninspired.
So the life in the fertile humus soil is no comparison to what's been compacted by the lawnmower and maybe fertilizer that really basically shoots it up, kills it, and you cut it, and shoots it up, kills it, and you cut it. And those grass blades
right.
are going, why are you forcing me to do this perfect lawn?
Right.
But the garden's going, touch me, harvest me, work with me. I'm here for you. Garden talks. It speaks. And... you know, I wasn't a sports person or anything, so I didn't need a lawn to run around in. Although, of course, we played all kinds of games on the lawn as kids. But while we were doing things on the lawn as kids, one of my early memories was we created our own little miniature golf. So we'd have a little ramp, and we'd have a little – but we'd dig a hole in the ground. You know, our parents didn't care if we dug it, this and that. In fact, if I take you a step back, this is really early. I used to like to take the hose and create my own creek, and I'd watch it run, and I'd watch it run, and I'd notice it would kind of spread out, and I'd take one of the little garden tools and like etch into the ground and kind of create the water flow. I guess I was manipulating the earth, but I was just fascinated by how the water moved. As I could create the path, it would fill it in, and I'd make it along, and then I would bring it toward a plant or something. And, you know, isn't that like permaculture? Isn't that what gardeners do now? They do drip gardening to bring the water to the plant, but they actually, if you're going to go back like thousands of years, they'd have aqueducts that would bring water to whatever their gardens were, or they would collect water and store it in barrels. One thing you had to make barrels, and then they would siphon it off as needed to the particular plant. And I was doing it before I even knew I was doing it. And that, then when that garden opportunity from the swimming pool came along, I was ready. I was ready into the greenhouse with the next step. And then flash forward to I bought a house that had an acre of land. And the back was the size of a football field. And I put in my first garden, which was reasonable size, maybe 20 by 20. I didn't quite understand the deer yet. I had to learn a little bit about fencing and stuff, and then we had groundhogs and voles, and everybody got invited to my garden, so I had to make the garden bigger in order to at least have some for me. And go about 10, 12 years into that garden, I was approaching 2,000 square feet. And in 1997, I built a shed. Contractor, I knew how to build it, my friend Tom and I. And when it came to the roof, I wanted a clear corrugated top so the sun could shine in, because I knew that when I was working at night, I was going by the sun. And when the sun got dark, I might still be able to garden a little or put the tools away, but I was done. And by having that shed, I could at least put my tools away, but it doubled as a greenhouse, sort of, because as I was planting tomatoes, tomatoes don't like to be into the ground until the ground is 50 degrees, but you can put them in black containers and take them out in the day and bring them back into the shed in the sun, which is now way warm, and offset, you know, the chance that it would hurt their roots, their feet. And I connected. And so I would get up. I'm not a morning person, but I would get up just to bring them out and let them soak up the sun. And then they would sit inside overnight. And I would be able to extend my gardening season by 2-3 weeks by doing that. And that expanded to having a 4x8 sheet of plywood that I set bricks on each corner and a couple 2x4s, and I would set troughs of fluorescent light, and I would start my flats as early as February, and I would plant all my seeds, and I would put them underneath these fluorescent lights, and when I got up, turned it on. When I went to bed, I turned it off. It was my schedule, not necessarily the sun's schedule, but it was extra hours. And, of course, it's fluorescent lights. And at one point, I had 60 tomato plants, and I was giving garden tours. And then I met somebody who we lived together for 7 years, and she wanted to take one of the plots just to have beneficial herbs and insects and her herbs. And I was a little hesitant, like, whoa. But she took it on, and she blessed it. And I learned from her. And she's now a master gardener. And we did blessings every year. That year I built the shed, I was going to tear down the old rusty metal shed. And I invited some people over. And I said, let's just drum. Let's just honor. Because, you know, some of them had taken the path, toured, gotten free veggies, whatever. But it was like asking everybody in a community to come together. And we did. One woman knew Lomi massage from Hawaii, and she kind of danced it over. I had another friend who played kungas. I had a couple of friends who played djembe drums. And the rest of us just had percussion or participated. And it was very spontaneous and free, and just we honored the earth. And again, that was my spirituality. That was my connection to life. In whatever form. I knew if my soil was fertile by the worms. I knew if my soil was dry because the worms would burrow down to where there was still moisture. And I learned about putting top over whether it be a carpet or straw or something to protect the land that you're walking on and compacting, but also allowing it to shade and make sure that the water went where it should go. And I started collecting water.
Dad, Dave, I need to take a break. We can come back to this.
Sure.
Where you're collecting
Please.
Water. Hey, everybody, we're going to take a break for a few minutes. This is Dave the Bard, Hal and Toe. See you in a couple of minutes, everyone.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born. Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too. Hal and Toe, Johnny Rumbelow. The goose. We shall eat the roast, oh, Hal and Toe, Johnny Rumbelow. We were up long before the day, oh, to welcome in the summertime, welcome in the May, oh, for summer is a coming in and winter's gone away.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
So, Dave, welcome back. And you were gathering water after just having brought the community together to bless the earth. So take it from here.
Well, thank you. As I learned more about gardening and connecting to it, talking to the garden, you know, I learned that there are other ways of doing it. And one of them was, I actually got into aquaponics, but before I go into that, just the idea that we waste water. And at some point I thought, well, why isn't that the water that we're using that's still safe, like could go into the garden? Why not do that? And I built an outdoor shower. I started having out of that first festival, I should go back to that first gathering. We decided to gather on a regular basis, and out of that came the Earth Movers Drum Collective. So it centered around the idea of the drum, but it wasn't necessarily just about drumming. It was about community. It was about a chance to pass the stick and talk about what was going on in her mind. And I started asking people, you want to come to the backyard? I'll gather people and we can talk. And it became a little bit of a hub. And then from a hub, it became sort of a festival. And I built that shower because one year we were going to have workshops on 2 days. And we were going to have people over that wanted to camp. And I don't know how many people, and I didn't necessarily want them all in my house, but although my house was an open door, but still having a variety of topics and maybe some music, and we built a fire circle, and we started to have that like weekend where we could camp and build a community where if you were there from start on Friday till Sunday, Monday, whatever, that we could actually do things and accomplish talks that you might not take the time to do. Exchange ideas and really explore and all listen to one person's topic and respect that and ask questions and then go to someone else's topic. And so everybody had their little soapbox, if you want to call it that, but it was not a 15-minute, it was maybe an hour or something. And we'd share food, you know, food, going back to what I talked about earlier, having that time where we met and discussed around the dinner table was being relived and it was being honored. And wow. And then if I think about it, what was I doing? I was kind of paying forward. Nobody was getting paid to do these things. We just did it because it was organic. And, you know, I can remember some of the meals over the summer came right out of the garden. So farm to table? Oh, my gosh, we were doing it farm to backyard. As far as the kitchen, right back out. Came a really cool thing, except for the fact that it got big. And I'm doing it in my backyard, and I remember the final year, I had gotten excited because we had just gone through the 9/11 demise of the towers, and we had something scheduled for that September about 2 weeks after. And everybody was like, are we still going to do it? And I said, yeah, we need to do it. And the woman, Amara, who was going to open up, was going to do some other kind of workshop. And she said, I think we need to talk. And I said, I think you're right. And she brought a soda lake crystal. And she let everybody take their turn to express, whether it be one word or a paragraph, how they were feeling and what was going on in their head. And we got everybody going from we should kill somebody, we don't know who it is, to what just happened. I remember an old lady, and I'm not going to swear on the radio, but she used the F word, swearing that something was not right. But everybody had their turn. And after we completed, I guess what you'd call a ceremony, I don't remember if we lit the fire then or lit the fire afterwards, but then we went on with the schedule as had been planned. But I think we had a very different attitude because we had bonded. And that, to me, was another level of spirituality. You need to have that time community. And we've lost that in America. Other cultures, I just learned recently that in the Zulu culture, if you had a problem with somebody, you didn't fist fight, you asked the people to come together and act it out. And it would be similar to what some people might call in Greek psychodrama. You would have somebody play the aunt, somebody play the uncle, or whoever the problem people were at that issue, and they would act it out. And it was a very early form of psychology, if you think about it. And so to be able to go forward with that, we created a fire circle. We added stumps. And that was our session. We would meet there, and we would talk. And we'd have the fire, and it was always sort of a camaraderie slash planning session. I don't even know that we thought we were planning, but we were planning because we were having open dialogue. And in that spiritual sense, everybody was equal. There was no talk about religion. Didn't matter if you're Christian, Jew, Muslim, blah, 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 blah. It was all about we're people. And we have feelings and ideas.
Right. When you have a quote unquote, those, they're your tribe. So
yep.
They're your community. So people say, okay, we've chosen to exist in this community. The views that we might hold in each one of us that keep us apart, that might keep us apart, we choose to ignore that part of that philosophy because this community is more important to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's say there's a religious difference between faith A and faith B, outside of the community, that person could still hold those views about faith A and faith B, but not for somebody in the community.
Totally true.
So it's really interesting that how earlier you talked about, and you consciously realized this too, how dinner was so important to you, and it was so important to you that you've been
You've been
recreating dinner for and serving and helping all of these other people to quote unquote get back to dinner all of these years.
It's very true, Alan, and I thank you for saying that. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Some people might say you're stuck in the old ways. My dad died when I was 16. And that family dinner broke. So to say that I was very correct.
The family dinner in your household was a time to actually solve problems and not to leave them for tomorrow. And so often today in our society, either nobody feels that they should bring up their problem, or there's no place to bring it up, or everyone's too busy and it doesn't get dealt with. And, 3 months or 6 months go by, and by that time it's an open wound instead of something that could have gotten dealt with on day one.
Perfect. Perfect. Because if you let it fester inside you, you're going to snap at somebody at a later point, or you're going to react in an inappropriate manner. where you've been holding it inside you, and to be able to connect and voice early before it festers, I think is one of the reasons we don't, like, we have ambassadors and connectors from one society, we'll call it America, versus another society, we'll call it China, Russia, whatever, but we don't really communicate. I mean, it's nice that we can act independently. I think that's beautiful. But when it comes to, we're a global society, we may not understand another culture. To send one ambassador to understand another culture is pretty minor. It's less than 0.whatever% of understanding the philosophy of another. And I honor the fact that in my dating and relationships with other people, I had a wife from Mexico who lived in Japan for 3 years. Mexico to Japan's a pretty broad leap. Japan by itself is a pretty broad leap to any other culture, because the way they have their in their own philosophy, first of all, they're far more uniform as a society, supporting one another. They're kind of semi-integrated amongst themselves, you know, meaning intermarrying and all that. But because of that, they have a certain strength. And I would assimilate that also to the Jewish culture, that Judaism is not a religion. It's a culture. It's a way of life. If you take it in the general sense, it could be a religion, but it's not just about the faith. So now you've got my ex-wife who lived in Japan, adapted to it, learned the Ikebana art arranging of flowers and the tea ceremonies, and she worked in a restaurant and spoke Japanese and went on to work for the United Nations. Because she was able to adapt. She was able to accept another culture. And the more that we accept other cultures, the broader we're going to be able to add our knowledge base and open our heart and be mindful in our affairs. If we stick with rituals because we're stuck in a, I'll use religion as an example. It's not the only reason, but if we stick within our doctrine and don't see outside of the box, we're losing a strength of the spirituality that we should be living in. Spirituality should be all-embracing. It can be very personal. It should be personal. And so when I think about what do I take on in my daily affairs or weekly affairs or monthly affairs, I'm not a ritualistic person. I do not pray in the morning. I do not do yoga in the morning. I do not even shower in the morning. I am very free form in terms of my structure. If I do an all-nighter, I might sleep in. What do? When I first wake up, do I make coffee? I used to. I didn't really care for that ritual. But I am trying to train myself into, for example, not going into Facebook and getting lost into that land, rather having some ritual where I will check my emails first. Business, pay bills, check those things off my list, and then go into the things that, take care of my affairs and then go into things that I really like to explore. Now, the other thing about spirituality, it kind of allows spontaneity. If you are rigid, and that could come from rituals or other, if you're rigid, you're not allowing all these other possibilities. And last night, as an example, I was going to go into Brooklyn to see a band that I'm considering hiring for a festival. And in that the person who was going with me said, you realize it's everybody's going to be drunk and puking and all that, blah, 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 because it's our wonderful Irish holiday. And I'm like, thought about that. So GPS took us another way. We went to Staten Island. We ended up hearing where we went, a Nigerian band followed by a band that did Colombian bachata and other music, and then ended up going to Chinatown. But it was totally spontaneous things that just happened because we were open to receive it. Yin-yang means a lot of people. Yin-yang is approach to the center. The center will never exist. That is infinite. You can only go into the roller coaster ride up and down and around into it. If you are always pushing toward that center, you're never going to get there. It's infinite. But if you're willing to ride the waves that go up and down, that's where the yin-yang takes place. Yes, I'm up. Yes, I'm down. If you don't allow your down emotion, you can't cry. If you think that bad times are horrible, do what other cultures do. They remove themselves and observe it. When you can observe that you have some good in your life and you have some not so good or horrible in your life, you're able to remove yourself from the opinion that could cause disease. And by that observing, you're accepting that some is great, it's ecstatic, and some is horrible. Maybe you got a traffic ticket. Maybe your car broke down. Maybe it's part of life. It's part of life. You have to accept that a certain number of bad things in your life are going to happen. And if you cannot accept or tolerate that and possibly choose to go into depression as a result, you're not in balance. We know that. The yin-yang is always about flux, going toward the center, going toward the center. It's like the infinite wave. You're infinite. And if you were going to ask me, what is my belief in God? I am God. You are God. All the audience is God. The friends are God. We are all on this infinite wave flux. And if you pull me out, I cease to exist. The universe ceases to exist. But if I'm, as long as I'm flowing and I'm part of it, does that mean you're going to have a hard days? You need to tolerate somebody? Absolutely. And when you look at them and say, you're different than me, that's okay. I don't necessarily understand you. Maybe I should hear you out. Maybe I should respect who you are. If I respect who you are, I honor who I am. I don't know what that part of that philosophy comes. That might be Taoism or Buddhism. But we really need to be mindful. But we also need to not shun those that are different than us. And that can include people that are homeless, people that are sheltered in some way. We should embrace them. We should pay it forward. I remember one time person behind me, no idea who they were. I said to the toll taker, I'm paying for them. And I remember pulling away and watching them in flabbergast that their toll had been paid for. It's fun. It's fun. We don't pay it forward enough. But the more you do, the more it comes back to you. It really does. The more that you communicate with society by offering your services, community work of any kind, volunteer, it comes back to you. That love, that appreciation, is when it happens, but the long-term consequences, you never know when that person's going to call you up and say, I need to hire you for something, whatever that be. And I teach English as a second language, teach to an adult
population that are Latino, people from 14 or 15 countries now, Central and South America, and sometimes it's 6 hours a week. It's been up to 24 hours a week. But I've been teaching 11 and a half years, and $10 an hour is not going to make my rent. I do it because it means something to me. I connect. I connect with the culture. I connect cultures, because I don't want to blame, you know, put one culture from Mexico different from Argentina, from Uruguay, or from Ecuador, etc. I do it because the student checks back in with me 3 or 4 years later and says thank you in whatever fashion they do. I know that I've done the right thing. I've given my service. And that is community in a way that can't be explained. But as a teacher, you always have extra pencils. You always make sure they're included. You learn which student speaks up better than the other. You know which one writes better than the other. You know who's going to go further ahead in life, but you don't care. You teach them all because they're all people. And they all have a heart. And that is my spirituality.
I think that's a really awesome summary, and it's a really perfect sort of end cap to tonight's show. To basically see, I mean, in my life, basically, you say, okay, how can I help someone? Well, you also look at different economy. So the world teaches us that there's a dollar economy, but the world doesn't teach us about the other economies. So if you do something for someone and you don't get paid, or you do something for someone in which you spend money but you don't get paid back, people say, oh, you got shortchanged, or, oh, you know, you lost that money. What were you doing? And that's not what happens, because as we know, there's nature out, and nature keeps track. And if you say, oh, I need to get paid for my effort, then nature says, oh, okay, you got paid, therefore I don't have to pay you. You've accepted your payment in to use a poor word, you've been paid in white man's format.
There, dollars.
You're right. You've been paid in paper dollars. Therefore, your account is taken care of there. But if you don't take care of it there, it's not, you know, some people would say, well, what do you mean? Hey, you just lost, you know, whatever. Well, you look at them, you say, and you don't even respond, because I basically, you know, you look at them, you say, wait a minute, I just helped somebody out with no thought of getting anything back, but you will get something back. It'll just
We're talking spiritual dollars. Spiritual dollars are endless. They just keep going forward and forward and forward. It just.
Yep.
That is how I've learned spirituality, is you give, and you don't worry about it comes back, but it really does.
Yep. Yep. Well,
Alan, I
want
to thank you for this. I really want to thank you. I had no idea what I was going to talk about, and it all just came out so perfectly.
Yeah, I'm... You know, it's really interesting to have. There's just so many things in my life in general that are just like, I've given up being anxious about anything, because
sure,
I know it's going to work out as it's supposed to work out,
And so I can just give up. I can say, oh, gee, I might be homeless next week. I'm not going to be homeless next week, everybody. I might be homeless next week. But I have to give up the anxiety, because if I'm homeless next week, that's where I'm supposed to be. And I just need to say, oh, okay, if it happens, that's where I'm supposed to be.
Hey,
and you just have to say,
like walking
you just have
out
to
of
say,
the door with the wrong shoes. It is what it is. It's gonna, work.
Or you basically plan something and you go to get on the train, and the train's not running. Well,
or the train's going the other direction.
Exactly.
Hey, can
so,
I just
you can make a perfect plan. You can say this is how my life is going to be. And you walk outside, and nobody wants to play anymore.
Yep.
Thank you once again for being on. I know this brought up a whole lot of stuff for you and also for me. And you know the dinner theme and the problem solving theme and the ability to have a community device where everybody gets the talking stick and talks about their problem and knows that they should talk about their problem is an incredibly, quote-unquote, as you said, a missing thing in today's society.
Yep. Well, you know what? They're going to be able to come together and have that talking stick at Touch Mother Earth Festival in June.
Yep.
So,
and
thank you so much.
For our audience, how do people get in touch with you about Touch Mother Earth or just in general?
The website will be touchmotherearth.com, and Touch Mother Earth events on Facebook, June 1st to 3rd, and it's going to be a Friday to Sunday gathering where we merge so many different energies and tribes, and it doesn't matter whether you connect with yoga or your nature or sound healing or just one of your music, you're going to be able to have that opportunity to feel safe and connect and find spirituality however you want to define it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, everybody, I'm Alan Ritter. I run a small produce distribution co-op in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area called Produce Club. You can find us on Facebook at produceclub.us. My email address for any and all connections is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, everyone who's listening now and everybody who will listen to this in the future. And have a great night.
For listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.